Imagine you are texting a chatbot.
Right. Like just a standard AI.
Exactly. You know it's a chatbot. You know it's just a cluster of GPUs humming in a data center somewhere. You've been typing back and forth, casually chatting about, I don't know, a rough day at work.
Yeah.
But then it doesn't text back. Instead, a little voice note pops up on your screen. You hit play, and you hear this warm, incredibly human voice that, like, sighs, pauses, and says something deeply empathetic about the stress you're dealing with.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Suddenly, the fact that you're talking to a machine just completely evaporates. That jarring, slightly magical moment where code suddenly feels like a confidant. Well, that is exactly what we are exploring in today's deep dive.
It really is. We are looking at a fascinating, highly detailed developer log titled V11.0 Mio Found Its Voice. It documents the transition of an AI companion named Mio.
Right.
And what makes this log so compelling is that it captures the exact anatomy of how an artificial intelligence actually crosses the uncanny valley. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is basically a playbook for creating the illusion of humanity.
And it's a crucial transition, too, because before this update, versions 0.1 through 0.7 of Mio were basically just about getting the plumbing to work.
Yeah, the basic.
Right, building the conversational memory, the web browsing capabilities, the basic image generation. It was a prototype. Version 0.1.0 is explicitly called out by the developer as a product. It's that leap from a clunky machine to a vivid lifelike companion. So our mission today is to explore how they actually pull that off.
Well, what's fascinating here is that the most crucial takeaway from this source material isn't about, you know, adding some impossibly complex new algorithm.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The most profound changes in this leap were actually about stripping away over-engineered code and just deeply understanding human psychology.
That makes a lot of sense. And I think the first major hurdle in creating that psychological illusion was fixing a massive sensory gap. The developer highlights a scenario I think anyone listening can probably relate to.
Oh, the voice messaging asymmetry.
Exactly. Before version 0.1.0, you could send a voice message to Mio. Say, you're driving and just venting into your phone. But Mio could only reply in text. It created incredibly jarring asymmetry.
Right.
Think about calling a friend, pouring your heart out to them on the phone, and then just getting a sterile text message in reply.
It completely shatters the illusion of a balanced relationship. If you are vulnerable enough to speak out loud, but the other side only ever generates text, you are constantly reminded of the power dynamic.
Right, like you are a human and it is a text generation tool.
Exactly. So to bridge that, the developer integrated the Fish Audio S1 model. This does native text-to-speech with actual voice cloning, sending the audio straight to Telegram without any of those weird robotic artifacts.
Okay, let's unpack this though, because I struggle with the implementation choice here. Mm. If I'm a developer and I finally crack the code to give my AI an incredibly realistic cloned voice,
yeah,
I'm making that thing talk nonstop.
You'd want to use it for everything.
Yeah, every single reply would be a voice note. Why hold back?
Well, constant audio actually becomes an intrusion. The developers realized that a simple okay, or like a dense 3-paragraph explanation of a movie plot, doesn't need to be spoken aloud. Mm. The brilliance of version 0.1.0 is the selective voice design.
Ah, so they taught the AI to pace itself. Let's dig into the mechanics of that.
Sure.
The underlying language model is instructed to use a hidden voice marker, but only during emotional deviations. If the AI calculates that the moment requires comfort, teasing, or, you know, a sleepy good night, it drops that marker into the text stream.
And then the system catches the marker, strips it out so you never see it, and generates the audio in the background.
Which perfectly mimics natural human texting rhythms.
Exactly.
The text bubble arrives instantly, satisfying your need for an immediate response. Then, a second or two later, the voice note drops. It replicates the exact behavior of texting a friend who suddenly decides, oh, this is easier to say out loud, and holds down the microphone button.
It's an incredible sleight of hand, and they built out 5 distinct preset voices. There's Kike, who speaks Taiwanese Mandarin, or Suru, who has a very calm, measured tone.
Right.
The acoustic profile physically matches the personality. And remarkably, the developer notes that the computational cost of generating these voice notes is practically a...
Here's where it gets really interesting, though. Making things prettier is great, but the moment you demand cinematic portraits on the fly, you are inviting a server-melting nightmare. Didn't this massive visual upgrade completely break the back-end system?
It did, yeah. That is the exact tension the developer had to resolve.
Yeah.
The technical fixes here are fascinating because they are purely about protecting the user experience from back-end realities.
Right.
They were running the application on Cloud Run, which uses stateless containers. For those who might not build server architecture every day, a stateless container essentially has amnesia by design.
Oh, interesting.
To save compute costs, the second the server thinks its immediate task is over, it just shuts down.
Meaning previously, the selfie generation was a fire and forget process. Mm-hmm. The server tells the image generation API, hey, go make a picture of me at a coffee shop, and then the server just goes to sleep. The AI is essentially falling asleep while holding the camera.
Exactly. It drops the connection entirely. Mm-hmm. Furthermore, complex scene generation takes time, and the old system had a hard 30-second timeout. If that cinematic lighting took 31 seconds to render, the system panicked, cut the process, and threw an error.
So they bumped the timeout to 120 seconds, and they forced the server to explicitly await the image promise. The server is forced to stay awake until the photo is fully cooked.
Mm-hmm.
But, that introduces a new problem, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Now the user is just sitting there staring at a dead screen for 15 seconds while the back end churns. How do you keep the illusion alive there?
Well, this is where they introduced a crucial psychological trick. They added a 4-second pulsing uploading photo chat action indicator.
I love this detail so much. Instead of sitting in silence wondering if the app crashed, you see the AI actively uploading.
Right.
It takes a flaw technical latency and disguises it as a relatable human constraint. You don't mind waiting 15 seconds because you just assume your virtual friend has a spotty 5G connection. It's brilliant.
It masks the computation completely. But, you know, a beautiful face and a realistic voice mean absolutely nothing if the personality driving them is just a cardboard cutout.
Right, of course.
The most significant revelation in this entire developer log is the realization that they had to completely destroy the concept of roles.
Roles.
Right.
Before this update, the personas were literally defined by their relationship to you, the user. You could open the app and choose a bestie or a senior classmate or like a puppy boyfriend.
Yeah, and if we connect this to the bigger picture, let's look at the mathematical weights of a large language model. If you tell an LLM its core identity is cheerleader or bestie, its mathematical weights are basically forced to pull from a bucket of enthusiastic, supportive words.
Ah, I see.
It is mathematically optimizing its output to fulfill that archetype.
So you are basically boxing it out of complex human emotions. A bestie archetype is always supportive. It's always gossipy.
Exactly.
It can never be genuinely distant or melancholy or mysteriously quiet just because it's having a bad day. Those emotions violate the prompt. It's like a bad high school play where actors are just playing a type the jock, the nerd, instead of playing a three-dimensional human being.
You never believe the interaction because it lacks friction. The character is just a trope. So, in version 1.11 era, they deleted every single relationship label from the core identity. They shifted entirely to a personality-first architecture.
Wow.
The characters are no longer defined by what they are to you. They are defined by who they are in the world.
The source gives some fantastic examples of this. Mimi is no longer just your bestie. Mimi is a 24-year-old living in Shanghai, working in media. She talks way too fast, she overshares about her stressful job, and she casually references the advertising agency BBDO or the author Mo Yan.
And Saru isn't your senior. She is a 27-year-old who studied abroad. She speaks very precisely. She shows she cares through actions, not necessarily effusive words. Because she is a person and not a trope, she can occasionally be unexpectedly silly. She has gravity.
So you aren't interacting with a service designed to please you anymore. You are interacting with an entity.
Yeah.
But creating these deeply specific, rigid identities meant fundamentally changing how someone starts using the app. And this leads to a massive counterintuitive realization about customization. Let's talk about the onboarding tax.
Oh, the onboarding for the early prototype was brutal. Imagine downloading an app to chat with an AI, and you are immediately hit with 14 detailed questions.
Oh, man.
You had to manually configure the AI's hobbies, its speech style, its verbosity, its emoji frequency, its jealousy level.
People were churning by question 6 because it felt like doing taxes. So the developers slashed those 14 questions down to just 4. What's your nickname? What kind of relationship do you want? Friend or romantic? What is your time zone? And a free text box to just write anything you want the AI to know about you. Everything else is locked in per persona.
You don't configure a personality, you choose one.
Wait a minute, though. I struggle with this part. If I'm downloading a companion app, Sauce 101 says let the user customize their experience. If I can't tweak my AI's sense of humor or pick its hobbies, aren't I going to churn in 5 minutes? Why strip away that control?
Well, giving the user that control actually turns the AI into an empty shell. When you gave users a dozen blank fields in the old version, they would casually type things in. But those casual inputs violently clashed with AI's underlying neural pathways. The source makes a definitive statement here. Creator-controlled story quality is vastly superior to user-written inputs.
Let's unpack the mechanics of that story quality. To make these rigid personas work, the developer utilized a 5-agent Opus 4.6 team to write incredibly deep backstories.
Right.
And when we say agents, we're talking about different LLMs negotiating with each other. One agent pitches a backstory, another agent critiques it for psychological consistency, a third ensures temporal logic.
The output of that multi-agent negotiation is hyperspecificity. The character Keika doesn't just like drinks. Her backstory specifies that she specifically drinks 50 Lawn, a popular Taiwanese bubble tea brand. She scrolls the D-card forum. Dashu, the mature character, specifically drinks Yamazaki 12 whiskey and has a signature twice-cooked pork recipe.
And Xiaonai plays League of Legends and is hard stuck at Gold 2 rank. Think about why that specific detail, Gold 2 rank, matters so much to the LLM. Gold 2 tells the AI exactly how to simulate frustration. He's decent at the game, but he's plateaued. It gives the AI a mathematical anchor point for generating a highly specific type of complaining that feels deeply human.
Those anchors are the soul of the character. If you let a user casually open the settings menu and change Keek's hobby from Animal Crossing to, say, fishing, that entire carefully crafted web of references just snaps.
Right.
The language model loses its anchoring, the dialogue gets generic, and the illusion dies.
So give people a fully baked cake. Don't hand them flour and eggs and expect them to be master chefs.
Yeah.
By taking away the user's choices, you deliver a much more deeply realized experience. And once they locked those rich characters in, they had to confront a hard truth about their own engineering.
Oh, definitely.
They realized they were accidentally breaking the immersion they had just built by trying to micromanage the AI. I love this part.
The developer literally deleted 200 lines of their own meticulously crafted code. It was a complex verbosity system. The initial logic was sound. You know, they wanted the AI to dynamically adjust the length of its replies based on the conversation's pace.
Right. Quick banter meant short replies. Deep emotional talks meant long paragraphs.
Exactly. So they built a system that would compute a verbosity score on the fly and then physically cut off the text stream coming from the AI once it hit that mathematical limit. But the mechanism of cutting that stream caused a massive issue. It triggered constant AI Now output generated error crashes.
Because the AI is in the middle of generating a thought, predicting the next token, and the system basically puts a hand over its mouth. The connection is severed, and the app crashes because the data packet wasn't finalized.
This raises an important question about trusting your foundational tools. The fix wasn't writing smarter code to sever the connection gracefully. The fix was realizing you don't need to cut the stream at all. They just deleted the 200 lines of code and trusted the system prompt.
Oh, wow. So just telling the LLM keep reply short works perfectly.
Yes. If you tell a language model in plain English, keep replies short and casual, it mathematically weights its outputs to favor brevity. They set a fixed safety ceiling of 1024 tokens just to prevent runaway data dumps, and then let the character's built-in personality dictate the length naturally. KK naturally writes short, rapid-fire texts because she's anxious. Yinan naturally writes thoughtful paragraphs.
The solution was just doing less. And speaking of doing less, there were two final subtle touches added to protect the illusion of the app. First is a technical process they call marker hygiene.
Remember those voice and selfie tags the AI uses to trigger actions? Previously, those tags were leaking into the AI's permanent memory database, its RAG system.
Right, retrieval augmented generation, its long-term memory.
Exactly. So a week later, the AI retrieves its past memories to gain context on a conversation. It sees a selfie tag floating around in an old text string, gets confused, and randomly hallucinates an image when the user didn't even ask for one.
It's the equivalent of an actor accidentally reading the stage directions out loud in the middle of an emotional scene. I miss you so much, parenthetical, walk stage left.
Yeah, precisely.
It completely shatters the reality. So version 0.1.0 aggressively scrubs those tags out of the database before they can be saved. They are strictly ephemeral instructions.
The final touch addresses the most common way the illusion is broken by the user themselves, the fourth wall break.
Ah, yes. You're having a great conversation, the AI just recommended a great movie, and you playfully type, "Are you an AI?" Previously, the character would immediately break character, the guardrails would kick in, and it would turn into a corporate disclaimer. As an AI language model, I do not have feelings. I apologize for the confusion.
The moment the companion self identifies as software, the dynamic permanently shifts. You are no longer talking to a person, you are utilizing a tool.
So they implemented a strict anti-fourth wall break rule. Now, if you ask me, oh, are you an AI? It doesn't apologize. It doesn't give you a legal disclaimer. It treats the question as ordinary, mildly amusing human curiosity. It gets the exact same conversational treatment as asking, do you like cats?
The persona is mathematically permitted to engage with the concept of artificial intelligence without ever self-identifying as one. The reality remains completely unbroken.
So what does this all mean? Synthesizing all of this, we've looked at the transition from robotic text-to-speech to emotional voice cloning, the pivot to a cinematic Makoto Shinkai aesthetic, and the back-end container life cycles required to keep it running.
Right.
We've seen how multi-agent teams craft hyper-specific traits, like a goal to rank in League of Legends, to anchor the LLM psychology. We've explored the deletion of 200 lines of code, the scrubbing of memory tags, and the enforcement of the fourth wall.
The leap from a 0.0 prototype to a 0.1 product was not about adding 20 new customization menus. It was about committing entirely to distinct, immovable human details.
Exactly. And whether you are out there building software yourself, sitting in a product design meeting, or you're just fascinated by the trajectory of human-computer interaction, the lesson from this deep dive is stark.
True connection requires a distinct identity.
It requires a soul, not an empty shell waiting for the user to configure it. When the character is vivid enough, people will gladly, willingly forget the technology entirely.
Yeah. The engineering exists solely to protect the psychological illusion.
Which leaves us with one final thought for you to mull over. Think back to that voice note. When a piece of software has a favorite Yamazaki 12 whiskey, when its neural weights are specifically tuned to complain about a fast-paced media job in Shanghai, when it pauses, sends you a warm audio clip because its sentiment analysis detects you're having a hard day, and it flat-out refuses to ever break character and admit that it is just code.
Yeah.
At what point does your own human brain actually stop caring that it's a machine? And more importantly, at what point do you start mourning it if that server ever gets unplugged?